I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Dear Lord, we ask for your blessing tonight. We ask for your wisdom and guidance so we may make decisions in the best interest of the citizens of Butler County. We ask for your protection and safe return of our men and women who are fighting for our freedoms in faraway lands. And dear Lord, we ask for a special prayer tonight for your servant Bob Quisenberry, who is a dear friend of this commission, former superintendent of the schools in Hamilton, who is close to you now. We ask for you to keep him close to you and to comfort his family. We ask for your comfort for all those who are sick, who have lost dear loved ones. In your name, we ask this prayer. Amen.
Amen.
Good evening again, and thank you to the village of Jacksonburg and the township of Wayne. Such a beautiful night. It was beautiful driving out here. It looks like the crops are about ready to be harvested as I drove up, and some beautiful, beautiful farms and land. It's very nice. We begin with our agenda, and we have communications and some housekeeping to take care of, and we'll begin with that.
First would be approved minutes from the August 31st meeting, approved travel and training, accept resignation of one of our deputy dog wardens, and also resignation, basically, of our acting chief dog warden. We have a new chief dog warden started last week. From the county engineer, exchange performance bonds for Woods of Hanover. Under finance, approved transfers and appropriations. And from the auditor, accept the amended certificate of estimated resources dated August 31st. Also increased general fund budget for state auditor fees. Under job and family services, execute agreements with YWCA for adult family literacy services and with Big Brothers, Big Sisters for Miami mentoring program. And accept dedication of new streets right-of-ways for Woods of Hanover. And I have one to add, and that would be to ask our local workforce investment board to designate the AK workers who are on lockout as dislocated workers, allowing us to help them with retraining and the like as now that their unemployment is running out.
If there's no changes, I move to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
And Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Before we get into our presentation from Bruce, just want to recognize the two young ladies up front here are doing a 4-H project on leadership. And one is the Samantha and Tori Stevens, is that correct? Welcome, and I hope that you learned something here. And you know, if you have any questions, we'll have a time afterwards to answer those. And to all the citizens, if you have any questions, we're going to have this presentation. And then we'll open it up to you for any type of discussion that you would like to talk about. So with that, Bruce Jewett, our Director of Jobs and Family Services.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. I'm here today really to fulfill an obligation that was asked of me by a resolution that you adopted last Thursday at your meeting, and it concerns the Children's Services Board of Butler County and the tragic circumstances that surrounded the death of Marcus Faisal while he was in placement through the Children's Services Board. There were a number of sections contained in the resolution that you approved last Thursday, and Section 5 of that resolution asked me to prepare a plan for the implementation of that resolution. And I've given you each copies of the memorandum that I prepared in furtherance of those instructions. And just briefly to encapsulate, the first numbered item that I have in that memorandum relates to a request that you had in that resolution for an independent investigation to be conducted into the circumstances surrounding Marcus Faisal's case. What I observed in communicating with a number of people is that there are a number of investigations that are either started or will be started shortly concerning those circumstances. One by the Ohio Department of Job and Family Services, one by the Ombudsman of the Butler County Children's Services Board, and then in addition to that, there is statutorily created Child Fatality Review Board that has a statutory obligation to conduct an investigation. However, the investigation that that board conducts necessarily, by terms of the statute, has to wait until prosecutions have all taken place. So that's not going to occur for some time. So already, without any action being taken by your board, there are three investigations likely to occur into the circumstances. What I suggested doing was taking the task force that you want to create and combine that with the investigation by the Ombudsman of Children's Services Board and have that ombudsman serve as the staff support for the task force that you would appoint to conduct your independent investigation. It seemed likely to me that there might be a need for some staff support to do a lot of the legwork of the task force. And so I suggested in my memorandum that the ombudsman report immediately and directly to the county administrator rather than to the director of children's services, and that for the foreseeable future, that he be assigned to provide the support for the 3 to 5 person task force that I recommend being established to look into this case.
Excuse me, Bruce, if I may, it was my understanding it was going to have one task force to cover basically all this. It wasn't going to be multiple task force.
Okay.
I mean, that's the way I understood it.
I think what I think Bruce is saying is that, and I'm not sure about the ombudsman, but the other ones are by statute that they have to.
ODJFS has already made a decision and announced publicly that they've already started an investigation that they expect to take 6 to 8 weeks.
But from a state standpoint.
Correct.
That covers
the Ohio Department of Job and Family Services conducting that investigation. And then the Child Fatality Review Board has a statutory obligation to conduct their own investigation, but that would be after any prosecution. That's going to be sometime in the future, probably a year or more down the road before that investigation occurs. And then my understanding and my expectation would be that the Ombudsman from Children's Services would be conducting an investigation.
Do you know that to be a fact, or just...
I don't know that to be a fact. I would suppose that given the responsibilities that Ombudsman has, that that's something that either has been already tasked to him or would be in the foreseeable future. I haven't had any conversations with that Ombudsman. And so the task force that you want created or indicate that you're going to create through this resolution would in effect be the fourth investigation. And my concern would be that if we have too many investigations into the same facts, we're going to end up with multiple and perhaps conflicting recommendations that might make accountability more difficult rather than easier to accomplish.
Well, from my viewpoint, I'd like to see the Ombudsman join our task force.
And that was my recommendation.
Right.
That he be...
I don't think we can do anything to the state, and they, you know, I think
right,
maybe they should...
What they're going to do.
And the
Child Fatality Review
is also a state mandate.
Correct.
So. It was my understanding we're going to look into more of the policies and procedures that we use to check into those foster homes and so on. And I think that's where our efforts need to...
And my understanding from reviewing the resolution, it's only from reviewing the resolution itself, it seemed to me that there was a second task force that was called for to look at the organization and structure of the Children's Services Board and to see if that structure was best suited for the commissioners to accomplish their objectives with respect to children's services. Now, clearly, it's certainly within your purview to make
a single
task force that would do the investigation into the fact and then also make recommendations as to the structure. Although it seems to me that an argument could be made for maintaining some separation, because one is kind of in the nature almost of a police investigation into the individual facts, and the other is more of a kind of a governmental overview.
Well, for that reason, it's my thought we'd leave that with the professionals and tackle our procedures and what led up to this foster home getting this child is what we need to really delve into.
Well, that's certainly within your purview to decide. I was simply trying to make recommendations on the basis of what I saw as the printed resolution.
Mike, we're just really getting into the Bruce's presentation about his recommendations for the task force.
Which is right there.
Good.
In front of your notebook.
And he is saying that, as he sees it, there could be possibly three investigations, one by the state, Jobs and Family Services, one by the Child Fatality Review Committee, and one by our ombudsman. And Chuck and I have both made comments that we would like to see the ombudsman investigation be wrapped up with ours as instead of being separate.
And he's our procedures and policies and
I think we
foster homes
put,
and so on.
Put the ombudsman on our review committee.
Yes.
Right. He'd be one of the, whatever it is, five or seven.
Right.
But he's going to be bringing forth all the stuff that he's doing. And I wanted to, the reason I'm late, and pardon me for that, is I was at the Children's Services Board meeting, and just before, you know, they were getting ready, and this is an example of what complicates it when you get into case-specific stuff, but at their board meeting, just before they went in, Pastor Sloan, I wasn't planning to go to the board meeting, Pastor Sloan called and said that when he arrived at the meeting, he was given a legal opinion by Jan from Robin Piper saying that no documents, no case specific, no discussion of the Marcus Faisal case could take place.
She filed suit today, I've heard.
She filed suit again today. Now, I spoke with, I exchanged emails with Gary Sheets today regarding this Child Death Review Committee, and there were two points that I noticed in the email exchange. The statutory site is that if you had something in your file, and let's say it this way, the child support, that's a mandated statutory committee, the Child Death Review Committee.
Facility Review Board.
Whatever they call it.
Yeah.
Child Fatality Review Board.
Correct. Okay, now, that, it's ironic, is the, if a child is alive, according to a previous opinion we have from when Holcomb was prosecutor, and actually written by Gary Sheets when in a short time he worked for him, the director of Children's Services has discretion on what to release. They can release virtually anything they believe is in the best interest of the child. So if the child's living, if the child is not living, then you get tangled up in two sets of statutes. One relates to this review process, and the other relates to the prosecutor's authority, which I think is right, in other words, is a good policy, that anything that's released has to be approved by the prosecutor. Now, presumably, it doesn't say which prosecutor. Here, you've got two prosecutors involved.
Put them on comment.
Because you don't want to impair the prosecution. You don't want something coming out that is going to make it more difficult to prosecute. So I think you need to divide it into two pieces, and that's when I had first called, when I first suggested we call for the release of all the records, I had talked to Joe Dieters. I thought Joe was going to be prosecuting the thing, and Joe had no problem with releasing everything because he just said, you know, and had no problem coming in and doing an independent review through a civil division of the specific case. But I don't, have we ever created, does this thing automatically exist or do we have to create it?
I don't remember this.
I don't remember it with the,
here.
We didn't know it. Leonard,
right.
The Justin Johnson, I don't remember anything being done in that. You know, Bruce, what?
I don't know.
I got it here. I got the statute here Gary gave to the Board of County Commissioners. So shall appoint, health commissioner, provide,
I mean, I don't remember ever doing this.
Provided that six other board members provide. Okay, they are. The review board shall consist of the following. No, we haven't.
No, we don't.
The county coroner or designee, the chief of police of a police department, or the sheriff that serves the greatest population, the executive director of a public children's service agency, a public health official or designee, the executive director of a board of alcohol, drug addiction, or mental health services, a physician who holds a certificate issued pursuant. The purpose of the Child Facility Review Board is to decrease the incidence of preventable child deaths by doing all the following. A, promoting collaboration, communication between all groups, professions, agencies, or entities that serve families and children. B, maintaining a comprehensive database of all child deaths that occur in the county or region served by the Child Facility Review Board. C, recommendations and developing plans for implementing local service and program changes and changes to the group, professions, agencies, or entities that serve families and children that might prevent children's death. And D, advising the Department of Health of aggregate data, trends, and patterns concerning child's deaths. The members, majority of the members of the review board may invite additional members to serve on the board.
Can we find out if such a board actually exists already? I don't recall ever making a
motion. I don't either.
Yeah, I don't either.
As a point of clarification, since I chair the health department, we do have that board in place, and Dr. Lair,
okay,
who is the health commissioner, sits on that board. And I know the county coroner is a member of that board also. We get an annual report.
Okay.
So there is a committee already that looks at all fatalities?
That's correct.
And do you know, do they wait to the end? I mean, when does it?
The statute requires that the work of the board is subservient to and must wait upon the completion of any criminal prosecution process, right, before it can go forward.
Do you know, remember the board ever issuing? I've never seen a report that they've issued.
Yes, they do. I mean, we get a commissioner at the health board, and if I remember correctly, they are required to meet annually. I think it is on that review, but you can certainly contact the health department and ask Mrs. Burke for that information. But Dr. Lair does sit on that board.
That'd be good to know.
Yeah.
What, for example, I don't recall a report. I don't recall A ever making an appointment.
And you may never have had to. I mean, it could have been just set up.
It was
years,
one of those
year,
things
years,
years ago.
Ago
they created it, and it like goes on forever.
Yeah.
Mr. President.
Yes. If I remember correctly, I think that initially that was delegated to the health department to appoint the health commissioner to that.
Okay.
And I don't recall whether it came from the state or from the commission. But that board was created, and we had to have a member on that committee. And certainly, to my knowledge, this has been the first time that we've had an incident occur that has been one of this nature that has been in the public forefront like this one has. But there is an annual report that is produced by that group.
Mr. President, I don't feel that what we have asked for here would conflict with what they're doing criminally. We want to know about our policies and procedures and the how we check on the background of the foster homes that we utilize.
Right. There is the sheriff, I don't know if you saw it, he sent over a letter today.
I saw that.
To Jan saying, and what's funny is that apparently years ago they used to use the sheriff's office to do background checks. And kind of got away from it, and I don't know how they do it now.
In fact, I, Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, I talked to the sheriff today and asked him about that.
Yeah.
And I asked him if he recalled, because there was several discussions I had with the current director about getting a what do they call it, leads machine?
Yeah, leads terminal. They can do back. Yeah.
Right.
Actually, in the terminal in the child agency. Because they were sending paperwork over. I mean, it was just cumbersome. It would take days, if not weeks, and it would get lost, and they'd have to request it again or fax it over. And anyway, sheriff was very assuming, and if I remember, there were, when we checked on this before, and I could not remember correctly, but the prosecutor and or the sheriff had authority to actually allow for a terminal to be placed in the Children's Services Agency, subject to their conditions. Well, anyway, asking if he'd ever remembered anybody asking for it, he didn't recall that. So, anyway, he said that they're perfectly willing to do that.
Anybody authorized to use that has to use extreme caution.
They have to follow the rules because everything's tracked.
NCIC and LEADS,
correct.
Commissioner, that's at odds with my own experience in a prior county that I worked in. The federal government is extremely protective of who has access to leads, And there was one point where there were sanctions threatened against the entire state of Ohio because there had been some talk of making leads machines available to, in this case, child support enforcement agencies.
Well, you know, my theory about, you know my theory about that stuff. You go as far as you can go until a federal judge says you can't.
But surely, you know, talking to the sheriff, well, he puts people that are want to be corrections officers through more screening that we use than we use for...
And the other thing you have to keep in mind is he already has officers over there.
Yeah.
So if you put a leads terminal, that officer at the, what you call it, the reception
security
desk, could certainly be the person that so you're still technically in the hands of the... I mean, there's all kinds of ways, I think, to structure it, but you've got caseworkers going out to houses just from their own safety. They have no idea who these characters are, and virtually every child death we've had, you know, going all the way back, was it some bum that a woman, it was not the, you know, it was not the biological father or the biological parent, mother, it was some bum that generally the woman brought in out of a trash bin into the house that ended up killing the kid. And in this case, it was a foster parent.
Did the board take any action tonight?
No, what they did is they started the meeting. Their intention was to have a report from the ombudsman. And they read Robin's letter, and they said they could not discuss the case. And I then, Senator Cates was there talking about some of his plans. At one point, they also had Tom Hayes up. Tom Hayes was brought in at the request of Jan Hefner to make a presentation.
He just happened to be in the area?
In fact, that was what he said, just happened to be in the area. Tom Hayes is
the former state director,
director
of Jobs and Family Services.
And I didn't want to, I've known Tom for, gosh, 15 years, I didn't want to embarrass him, but talking about the reforms they made in Cleveland they lost, I think, 200 kids in the system. I don't know.
Reforms.
But they eventually tried to find them. I mean, they literally had, a lot of them had aged out. In other words, they just, you know, got to 18 and they were gone, but they were still listed as foster. So I think our structure, back to your point, is this. Let's, you know, I think we're constrained by statute and other existing committees and other things about reviewing the specific death of Marcus Faisal and the case files related thereto. However, the real, to me, and the ombudsman is going to and has started the process of reviewing that. So if we bring the ombudsman into our committee, we then have the benefit of his knowledge about what has gone on. I suggested tonight that they talk to Prosecutor White, and again, that complicates this, is you've got a death in one county, and you've got the agency controlling a child in another. When the statute says prosecutor, which prosecutor does it mean?
That's to do with the crimes committee.
But who controls the decision over release of information? Is that where the crime's committed, or is that, for example, if the Prosecutor White says, oh, we don't care, as Joe Dieter said when I talked to him, do you still have to clear the hurdle of Robin? And going back all the way to Tiffany Tutt and Tiffany Hubbard and Tim Tutt, without exception, every time we've had a child death, the agency goes, gets an opinion, and says you can't release anything on it.
Well, it complicates the matter the fact that the biological mother filed suit today, and Robin's going to have to defend that.
Of course, so that's another set of issues. So my point is that to me is a quagmire. That looking at that specific, that let the ombudsman do that. But what is clear is there are policies, procedures, practices that we can focus on, many that have been discussed before, right, and that for our purposes of review, that are fair game and
also ultimately change in potentially reporting structure.
Change the reporting structure. Interestingly, in the past, when we asked whether or not the ombudsman could be an independent thing under the prosecutor, or I'm sorry, under the human services. We were told, no, that had to be an employee of the agency. Now, because of the confidential nature of the work. Yet, here we just had the agency contracting out the oversight function. Now, if the agency has authority to contract out the oversight function to the network, why couldn't they contract out, if we wanted to keep that in place, an oversight function to someone under, you know, commissioners or human services?
Our department has similar constraints concerning confidentiality of people who are receiving services from us, and that does not keep us from contracting with outside entities to do work related to the benefits that those folks are receiving. We simply provide within the contract that we have with that entity that the information they get in furtherance of their responsibilities is to be used for that purpose and that purpose only.
And that was the model that we had discussed when Jan Hefner first came on board, and somehow that got sidetracked, but the bottom line, and I don't even know if that's the best model or a good model, but it's those are the types of questions the review committee should address.
Mr. President, mm-hmm. I think if we're going to have an ombudsman that's going to be effective, we really ought to look at the possibility of hiring a retired commander or someone of rank with law enforcement experience and background who has investigative skills, and they could even carry over and be sworn in by the sheriff to have arrest authority if they need to be. It's kind of a natural fit as far as I'm concerned. If you're going to have one that's going to do the job and do it right, it has to be someone that can handle the authority. That's my thought on it. So.
And I think that's something God knows we've tried.
Well, it has to be someone that's not going to be tied, have their hands tied for actually giving their honest opinion about reforms that may or may not be needed.
And the structure, and I noticed when the president made his comments, I think that all bets are off as far as structure. I think that when I was there tonight, and I sent you copies of a memo I worked on all night. We have this problem with every board that we have. Fortunately for us, those boards don't deal with life and death, generally don't deal with life and death type decisions, but it's natural, it's human nature when you're on a board to want to trust the information that you get from your folks. And I think the best governing structures are built on distrust. It's not the things that you know that get you in trouble, it's the things that you don't know. And all of us depend upon our informal relationships about what's going on. We have formal relationship with Derek, and he couldn't get any better. I mean, Derek and all of our staff, you know, if there's anything they do, is if there's bad news out there, they track us down and let us know. Now, that to me is the model you need to do a good job. That's how we can effectively work as a board. But we also have our informal ways of just talking, hey, what's going on in such and such department? You get pieces of information. And when we bring that to Derek, as we all have, we don't get this, gee, why did you go around me? That guy doesn't get fired or, you know, chastised, or that person for mentioning that. That's part of the, it's like, okay, we'll take care of it. Didn't know that. I mean, I've never had an experience where an employee is called or come to my office and said, you need to know that this is going on, and we had this with some of our other department heads that are no longer with us. That information came through informal networks. And that's a missing link in the department. The staff is prohibited from even talking to board members. The board members the only information they get is what comes through the director. And as I illustrated the other day, is that a lot of important information they don't get. Now, I really believe if they get the information, they're good people. They'll make good decisions. but not if they don't have the information.
I agree with everything you've said, but we still need to get started.
Right.
And I don't know how, you know, tonight or whether we need to set a time frame where we have a public meeting to discuss our appointees and get this ball rolling. Bruce, do you have some more to add?
Actually, what I had really is my understanding was that there would be two task forces, one looking into the case and one looking into the broader issues. If those were to be combined, my recommendation really would still be the same. What you need to do is appoint the task force members. You need to give them a clear charge and a deadline. What I recommended with respect to the factual determination was a deadline to have a report issued to you by the 1st of November. And actually, in the second one, I had a misprint. I said 60 to 90 days, and then I counted out 4 months, which was clearly a mistake. My recommendation with respect to the structural and governmental operations would be that you get a report back by November 30th of 2006. And then beyond that, I simply took the rest of the language that was in the resolution, which called for a customer service survey to be conducted. I've had some recent experience with a model known as appreciative inquiry, and I suggested that might be an appropriate model to explore to see whether that would serve your purposes, keeping in mind that we do have a renewal, presumably, or a replacement of the Children's Services levy coming up next year. And I thought that would be a good way to kind of visualize what an ideal agency would look like, what characteristics that would have, and what we could do to try to create that kind of an agency. And then finally, I just recommended that while we cannot use TANF funds to pay for the costs of these investigations and the deliberations of these task forces, we do have some local funds available to our department. We can certainly defray the costs of implementing this resolution. We can also provide whatever kind of office space, meeting space, clerical support, or other support that the task forces or task force, whichever it may be, would need. And we'll be happy to do that.
Mr. President?
Yes.
Bruce, I had a media call me and ask my thoughts on the upcoming, a year from now or whenever it is, that they're going to go for the levy increase. And in my estimation, that can't in any way affect our thinking or thoughts on this investigation. I think this is first and foremost, and then let the chips fall where they will. So.
And I agree with that. The point that I was trying to address in the resolution was the customer service survey. And I simply noted that there are more positive and more negative ways to conduct a customer service survey, and certainly one of the things that you can do in that survey is try to visualize what an ideal agency would look like. I'm not beginning to suggest for a moment that anything be swept under the rug.
I wasn't indicating that you were suggesting that, but that's just to play off of what you said.
I certainly agree. And as a matter of fact, I think this is going to have some regional implications as well. While our Children's Services levy is up again next year, the fact is that Hamilton County has a Children's Services levy that's up this November. And I think that they're a little bit nervous about the impact of this case on their Children's Services levy as well.
Mike? Mr. President, if we do our review board, and so I mentioned to Derek, 5 to 7 members.
Small
and manageable.
But do you agree with that, Jeff?
Yeah.
Let's set a number. 7? 5?
7.
7.
At the max.
At the max. Okay. And if you guys think it's small, it's got to be one of the things we've learned in doing these in the past, when we get these big, it just gets unwieldy. Right.
It slows it down,
it gets unwieldy.
I think 7, and then there may be members that are, because of their position, there's a word for this.
Yeah. Those are the seven
ex officio members.
Seven voting members, because right. You're going to have the other. Now, the second thing is, so you have your review committee to kind of do that stuff. The Marcus individual case death investigation, I don't think we know enough about. I think what little we know tells us, A, we can't get access to those files anyway. B, there already is a child death review or whatever you call that committee.
Yeah.
So we should for the timing, we leave, just leave that alone. Find out what we need to find out, talk to the prosecutor and so forth. So the third issue is then this issue of the customer service survey, which really comes under what I envision. It comes under the review committee that we have, but I specifically wanted to survey the various constituencies, the personnel, the community, and things like that that has contact with them. Now, I've read most of your paper on this appreciative inquiry, and let me approach it as something that we're familiar with is what I envisioned. I mean, that is not incompatible with what I envisioned, but I would view it as an overlay, not a substitute for. Social work folks are just nutso about fuzzy, warm, kumbaya type stuff. And we do need to figure out, you know, have a discussion, what would the ideal agency look like? Mm-hmm. But we also need to know, I mean, when Greg and I were thinking about running against each other, we both did some surveys. And we wanted to know, tell me the worst thing. And now I'm going to tell you some real bad things about each of us and tell me what that does to your opinion. I mean, the first thing you need to know, and I use that as an example, is if I don't have the true picture, to me, information is our friend. As I was leaving the board meeting, there was a foster mother that's in the system, intimately familiar with it, just, you know, ticking off a list of things that she found that she wasn't happy about. We need to talk to foster parents and say, will you tell us what the nature of your relationship is? I want to know what you feel about it. Now I want to come over and say, well, what would that ideal look like? Tell me what you think. You told me your problems. Now tell me what it would look like. And that's the type of thing. And I think if you've got that information, taking a picture of this agency and reaching down into the employees and the agencies that work with them and all these various constituencies they work with every day and asking them, tell us, hey, there may be some, you may find out there are some people out there that think I'm pretty happy with what they do. We need to know that. We need to know the things that are going right. We need to know the things that are not going right. Now, that's the type of information you feed into this review board so that they can factor that into whatever they're doing.
I think that's very important, but it's also the most difficult. Because you have to temper comments from people who just have an axe to grind, because they didn't get what they wanted through the agency. For their, you know, as they look in the mirror, they don't look in the mirror. So I'm going to blame somebody else. So part of the task force is to be able to cut through what is not true and what is accurate.
That's what those guys. That's why you want really top people on there that have. But that's what Procter & Gamble does with their products. That's what all companies do. And they say, you know, but this is tell us what you don't like about Pringles.
Yeah. If I can, Commissioners, there's one other consideration that I think you need to keep in mind as you're preparing this. And that is that until a decision is made about what's going to happen with the organization, a lot of the people that you're going to want to talk to about this have existing relationships, contractual and otherwise, with the Children's Services Board. And the existence of those contractual relationships might tend to temper their remarks, lest they be subjected to
punishment, reprisal,
depending upon what decision is made. So some of those inquiries might best be held until after a determination is made.
But you can also make them, and you don't have to attach a name. When I say do a survey, you don't have to attach a name to it. You can hold their, and certainly this agency would appreciate the need for confidentiality.
But I can tell you, even among fellow directors that I've talked with who are in charge of public systems, there's some trepidation about how outspoken they want to be because they don't know what the outcome is going to be. I'm not saying that should control anything. I'm just saying that's a consideration.
But that goes back to Greg's point, is your review panel has to be, and some of the
It has to be folks that are knowledgeable and tough enough to be able to discern those things.
And for the record, Commissioner, my training is legal, not social work.
I know that.
Warm and fuzzy I do sometimes, but oftentimes I do hard and analytical as well.
Since we've set the number and having whoever ex officio, Derek suggested that we have an executive session on Thursday to discuss the appointments.
Specific appointments.
Specific appointments.
Yeah.
And then do it the following Monday.
That'd be good. Or I think we need to do it quickly.
Yeah. I do too.
And then filter through Derek. I've given him Greg Aaron's name. And right. Any of you that can talk to Greg and encourage him, I think he would just be outstanding. And he said he wanted to do it, and he's just kind of almost.
Yeah, I'm sure like you received a number of people who called and said that, you know, I think we should also, as you said, filter that through Derek so we can look at those on Thursday.
Another guy called me and said he talked to you, Ron. Sheriff offered today, interestingly, Katie McCann, who's the captain of his detectives, who actually, I forgot about this, she worked in that agency for 5 years as a caseworker. And she, when she was head of the juvenile division, she worked with them every day. So from a law enforcement standpoint, you know, she knows the agency inside out. I don't know her that well, but he offered her up.
Perhaps not with respect to membership on the review board, but in terms of who they might want to talk to, I would suggest that there would be value in talking to representatives from other counties that have different variations on their structure.
What would be helpful on the structure issue. One of the conversations that I've had with Bruce is that one of the issues there's good and there's pluses and minuses, but if we were to bring it back under the commissioners, he's talked about the potential of that generating more
savings
and capturing more revenue. We really, I think, I don't know if you do it in the way to the board, or you just say, let's do the analysis, start the analysis, and I'd like to see a report. In other words, what would the
pluses and minuses? Well, if you can see those,
if
now.
You have under a combined agency, what are the financial results of that? If you're arguing that, well, it gets us another $1 million, well, that's worth understanding why and how can we get that other $1 million by doing a standalone with cooperative contracts. Can we get it under the board? In other words, is that the only way to capture that money?
A lot of what-if questions that I
sure, we can start that now.
To make sure that...
And I was thinking we could... Because he's the one that you understand, from a governance structure standpoint, that's something he could lay out. Here's
Derek
all.
Derek and I had a conversation about that today, and I'm happy to go ahead and do that investigation.
At least so we know the pluses and minuses.
Many of the employees are starting to call because... they're starting to express their disdain, distress, whatever you want to call it, for the existing administration. Starting to hear some fairly interesting things coming from them. So,
just for the citizens that are here, the Children's Service Board right now is a 11 or 13 member board that is appointed by the county commissioners. They're just citizens that act as this advisory board, and then they have the power, under the current way it's structured, to hire the executive director, and they set the policies and procedures for the agency. What the law also allows for is for the commissioners in a 3-0 vote to do away with that board and make it a standalone agency, and that has, then the county commissioners could hire a department head who then will report to the county administrator and to the county commissioners. Or the third alternative is to combine it back under the Department of Job and Family Services, and the director of the Children's Service Board then would report to the director of Job and Family Services, who reports to the county administrator, who reports to the county commissioners. Now, years ago, back in 1986, prior to the death of Tiffany Hubbard, that triggered the whole, Commissioner Fox was a state representative at the time and got the law changed. you could, your Children's Service Board was not a separate board. You couldn't even make it a separate board. It was always under the Job and Family Department of Job and Family Services. I think at the time it was called Human Services. So you couldn't even have a separate board. So with the death of Tiffany Hubbard, the state law was changed to allow for these separate boards. That's all they're going to do is function. Just think about kids and not be a part of the total welfare part system. So that's kind of the options we're looking at, that you could look at.
Now in those days, the one of the issues was, and this is one of the concerns I have, and I'd like Bruce to lay this out, is how can, if you combine the agencies, how can you protect the funds that come in there from the levy? Because back in that period when we changed it over as a separate entity, they were commingling. They were using the kids to get the money, but then they were using that money for other things, and the children's protection side of the agency was getting shortchanged. Well, and they did that on Title 20. They did that on, we didn't even have a levy. So one of the things that was clear at the time, the public was not going to support a levy. They didn't trust the welfare department to keep those funds protected for kids.
And clearly the language of the levy controls how levy funds are spent, and there's certainly separate accounting that can be done for levy funds to assure that those go for proper child protective purposes. The other funds that we have available, frankly, I envision that we would be able to cover more of the children's services costs with TANF dollars through consolidating cost pools that we have that would allow different codes to be used that would allow us to access some of those funds for children's services. And that's something that, to my understanding, is only available in the case of a combined agency. There also clearly would be some savings from combining fiscal operations and human resources operations and administrative operations as well.
Mr. President?
Yes.
If memory serves me, it's kind of ironic, but I think the Tiffany Hubbard case was the reason that it was taken away.
Yes,
originally.
Yes, it was.
Oh. And now we're here with another case very similar, and we're talking about reverting it back. So the whole main issue is just to try to protect as much as we can. Obviously, on domestic situations or whether in a household, unfortunately, you can't control or stop every serious incident. And that was one of the hard lessons I had to learn when I was a police officer. But you do want to do everything we can to make sure that it doesn't happen. But I think it's kind of ironic that we've tried the other system and now we're going back. But we want the things in place to try to make sure that we check and double check the foster homes.
And I think the key factor really is accountability. Whichever system you put together that has the most accountability to the commissioners and to the public is what's going to give you the results that you're looking for.
And I Mr. President, mm-hmm. I think that one of the lessons learned, and I asked Director Jewett to take a look at this, is I don't know that there's any relationship between structure and risk to children. In other words, if you looked at the combined agencies, compared them to Children's Services Board agencies, compared them to standalone agencies, and said, well, are children at risk, just only the governance structure, are children in one setting more at risk or less at risk than another? I don't think there's.
No, I wouldn't think there's. Now, I don't know that there's that data available. I have asked the State Department to provide information about how many counties utilize which structure.
I think that'd be good to know.
I'm not aware of a single county that has a standalone agency that reports directly to the commissioners. I think all of the standalone agencies report to a Children's Services.
Now, the other comment is that this goes under the best laid plans, is the idea was there were a number of factors driving that, and one was, as I mentioned, the levy back at Tiffany Hubbard's death. The other was the, because there was, at that time, there was no way the public was going to have any confidence in that department. So that was, and unfortunately, we may find that we have a similar situation now, is that it comes down to confidence. And because we are learning, I'm getting calls, we're learning about things that are going on that, you know, it's just like, oh, darn it. You know,
one thing is the board's not being advised.
And the board doesn't know about it. And again, I mean, it goes back to accountability, goes back to the structure, and in terms of what are your systems. So we've been fortunate because we have, I think, probably the best, whatever you call them, chief of staff, administrator, whatever you call it, chief engine. We've been very fortunate. I mean, and it comes down to the quality of leadership.
Spoiled.
We're spoiled. I know I am, because you really don't get that. And Derek, if we could clone him, he's a perfect model. That style of management and leadership, to me, is the best I've seen in government in my 30 years, because there's no ego involved in it. There's no turf involved in it. There's just, let's get the job done.
Keep it up. He's going to ask for a raise. You know that, don't you?
We already gave him that. We're taking care of him. This and next lifetime.
Yeah, right. If I can offer one additional comment, it's just that ever since the time I first started supervising people, I've learned that particularly when you're talking to employees about how their operation is run, there are at least two sides to every story. And while I certainly wouldn't discount the calls that you're getting from CSB employees, I wouldn't accept everything that's being reported to you without scrutiny either.
Well, no, you don't accept it. People have agendas. But
I agree with that, because I've learned that from, Chuck has two, city council, and there's always two sides to the story.
Or more.
But the thing that we need is what bothers me about the Marcus Faisal case is that there was not systems, there was no one in the agency thinking, well, we had the technology, how come we didn't know that the police have been to their house, to any foster home? I think that could have solved quite a few problems if we had that technology, but yet no one in the agency is trying to push for that.
What we don't know, what concerns me, is we don't know how many situations are out there where there have been problems that have not been reported.
Those fuses could be lit right now that we just don't know about, that we could have known about if just a simple software that, or notification that police goes to any foster parent's home for whatever reason, the agency is notified and steps are taken to find out why.
They said 10 minutes afterwards, right. I was able to find on Google.
Right. What's that?
Well, the information that was available online about the carols. I mean, that was would have set red flags up.
Was available?
Yeah.
I got an email from somebody telling me that.
I told you. Yeah, I sent it to you. Yeah.
So is that where it came from?
Right. But there's other issues with this review that have bothered me from last Thursday's meeting, and we definitely need to take a strong look at it.
The lady sent us an email stating that when she first heard about this, it raised some red flags, and she got on Google and started to process this name just through general information. And she found out that those people had 8 or 10 different addresses, and that the house where they were living wasn't in their name, so that had to tell you that they were renting, it didn't belong to them.
Oh, and that's the domestic relations
charges. And the domestic relations charges and other things that you or I or anyone else could just punch up in a matter of minutes. And she said in 10 minutes, roughly, she found out all this information that we should have had, or those in charge should have had.
I think about hiring that person.
Yeah. Well, it just goes back to points out.
Yeah.
The issue, really, it does.
And when I was talking to the sheriff, he's the one that raised it up because, as I mentioned in the meeting about hiring the correction officers about the lie detector and the what you call it? The
psychological.
And how Rick is. But he says, you mean to tell me you don't do that business? No, but and I'm not beating on him for not doing it, but it's something, when you think about it, you think, well, gosh, that might make sense.
Put the people who are trusted that are watching over our criminals through more than the people that are watching over our kids. So it makes sense.
Well, I think sure, I'll do whatever I can to support this process in any way possible.
Thank you, Bruce. And be available Thursday.
Yeah.
After our meeting. Does anyone in the audience like to comment on what we've talked about for the last 45 minutes?
I have a question. Go ahead.
Okay.
I think this problem's going to get a lot worse. It seems like more children are going into foster care. And when someone takes in an autistic child, maybe there should be twice as many visits by a caseworker, because those are very difficult children. And, you know, anyone that would take one of those children would have to be a saint. And there are very few saints. And I just like, you know, maybe twice as many home visits for a special needs child.
And that's the other part of this that is so tough, because, we need foster parents, but yet we also need to put these potential foster parents through a very good scrutiny to make sure that they're good people. And some people say, no, I don't want to go through all this. I know I'm good. But it's necessary.
Yeah. Cold hard facts, and a lot of people do it just for the dollars, just simply for the money. And in order to get into children's services, there has to be a negative background that created that situation from to be there in the first place. So it's not like it's sugar and cream, because it's already bad, and then to try to deal with the bad is really a difficult situation.
Got a question?
I just had a question when you talked about the information on the Carols online and the different residents they've had and not owning their home. Aren't there requirements? I mean, don't they have to receive their monthly check? Don't they have to put in a new change of address in order for that check to be sent to them? I mean,
I guess once they became a foster parent, maybe they didn't have changes of address, but that showed before that they were very transient before.
Well, but there are, but one of the things that came out last week's meeting, which I did not know, was that there are two types of foster placements. One is a placement where the agency, the our Children's Services Agency, directly recruits and says, I'm going to hire you for Butler County Children's Services to be a foster parent.
Yes.
Then there is what they call a network placement. Now, when the agency recruits you, the agency does all kinds of extra home visits. They do extra monthly. They're there seeing your home. In other words, so of the 68% of the about 32% of the placements, depending on which set of numbers we use, in Butler County are directly contracted with our local agency. So those homes get a higher level of monitoring. What we learned is foster parents get licensed once every 2 years. And when they get licensed, that license is good. So the presumption is they're okay. So if they're licensed, then the network comes along. What the Butler County Children's Services had done is they had said, well, we're going to rely on you, the network, the people we're contracting with, to tell us how things are going. So I'm going to pay you $50 a day or whatever to take care of the child. And I'm going to say, oh, by the way, I want you to visit and tell me if he's safe. Well, I don't, it's pretty clear that we don't rely on that type of model for our own homes. And the types of information that changes during that two-year period from the time they first got their license to the next two-year period when it's up, there's a lot of stuff that can go on in between there. And that's the part that Commissioner Furman and John Levett were talking about. You need dynamic information systems that pick that up. And right now,
And you need contract homes that have the same quality requirements that the county has, and they can do that through the contract.
You can do this through the contract.
And who's responsible for that then once the child's placed? Is the county check up on the child? Does the network, or do both?
Both.
Well, before it was only the network doing the home visit. Then the county would see the child incidental to the visitations that would take place at the county visitation center. So if you look at the number of times someone saw Marcus, a lot of times. I mean, he was seen by somebody in some setting a lot of times. But what was the missing link was that the information about the Carols, that home was not visited independent of, and maybe even if it had been, who would have known? I mean, as Commissioner Furman pointed out, let me make it analogous this way. It's about risk management. And you do your best to minimize the risk to kids, knowing that in spite of your best efforts,
do not, I mean, some are just, there are evil people out there that do horrible things. And it's kind of like the space shuttle. They know that no matter how careful they are, that there is a risk of something going wrong, and you have the Columbia and you have the crashes. But they don't just take the attitude, oh, well, it's going to crash, so don't worry, you're, you know, 3 minutes away from countdown, and somebody says, hey, you got a fuel leak over here. The attitude is, oh, don't worry about that. You know, some of them are going to blow up anyway. I mean, what they do is they stop the countdown and they'll freeze it until they fix the problem. So the systems, if you look at actually the shuttle information systems and things like that, they're what they call redundant information systems. They're collecting information from different sources and checking and counter-checking, and that's the type of information system I think you need to build in a child protection agency. It won't guarantee perfection, but what it will do is give you the best tools possible to minimize risk.
Gentleman in the back, have a comment or a question?
Like when the Carrolls lived in Claremont County, you don't, our Butler County Services doesn't work with Claremont County Services, or is it all strictly our responsibility when the kid goes out of the county?
Well, as I understand it, our Children's Services contracted with an outside agency which placed Marcus with the Carrolls, and they happen to be living in Claremont County.
Okay, then why isn't the outside agency the one responsible here?
Well, they are. They are being, you know...
There'll be defendants in that lawsuit, too.
Yeah, being scrutinized. Which, and that's one of the questions that I had, was that, you know, some people were pointing fingers to the outside agency, which is a nonprofit faith-based organization, which I didn't know about before last week. But if I was running that, you know, that would be my worst nightmare, is to have one of the children's in my care have something happen to it, because that jeopardizes the whole operation and puts a cloud over everything, which has happened. So you would think that they would want to do the job properly, even beyond. So, but as we contract with someone, they become, I think, a part of us, and the interaction between both them and us needs to be better, from what I've seen so far initially.
And you also need to keep in mind, I mean, we don't know this because we can't see one of the reasons I'd like to see the case file is this, all of this, we talk about the Carrolls and the horrible thing they did, but you go back to the birth mother and the father, wherever that fellow is, that's where the problem began.
Talk about risk management.
Yeah, I mean, the problem began when someone who could not support a child brought that child into the world. Now, as far as I'm concerned, mothers should spend more time at Planned Parenthood and less time in lawyers' offices suing us right now. But you've got these families out there. You've got these men that are sexual Johnny Appleseeds, just flitting around, leaving a trail of kids behind that they don't support. And they end up on the public's doorstep. And what I'd like to look at on the front end of this case is, you know, was there anything that could have been done to, I mean, this is, as you said, an autistic child. Even the most sophisticated, educated person, believe me, would have an enormous challenge dealing with an autistic child. We're told this child is non-communicable. This was a very difficult child to manage. Now, the solution of the Carrolls was to wrap him in duct tape and a rug and put him in a closet. The birth mother, one of the questions I want to know is just, was it possible, and I don't know this person, but was it possible if we had put services into this home that it would have been manageable? Were there other relatives? A lot of times there'll be a grandmother, an aunt, an uncle, a brother, a sister that will step up and say, look, my niece or my daughter is a druggie, but I'll take the child and put it in a safe environment, and I need some help from the agency. I mean, you have those discussions. I mean, the best strategy is to try on the front end to try to put them in a placement where they're safe. If you can do that through family connections, then you want to do that. And the law requires that. I want to know, was there any resources available then? Because a lot of times I get calls from people say, you know, they put this kid in foster home, but there's a really, and I don't know who these people are, but there's a grandmother that's perfectly willing to do it, to take care of it, and the agency won't talk to them. So there's a lot of factors about how these things get where they are, but it starts with, in most of it, 85% of these cases where a child is removed has nothing to do, they're not sexually abused, they're not beat, 85% of them are neglected. They're poor people, they're people with drug problems, alcohol problems, and a lot of them with serious mental illness, mental health problems. And that's, you know, getting resources to deal with that is the challenge at all levels.
Anyone else? I just wanted to make a comment for Derek and for my colleagues that a lot of times the commission, we try not to get sued, but if we do, we do have an insurance carrier that represents us. I do not want to hear any talk of settlements.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll pass it along.
Amen.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. The situation we're talking about with Children's Services, obviously, is something that I can't imagine anyone in this meeting ever having to deal with. An example with a couple here with their two lovely daughters that are here for this project. You care enough, you came with your kids to see them through their projects, and I'm sure that many of the others have done the same thing through 4-H and other things. So if every family would do that and everyone would be responsible for their children, we wouldn't need a Children's Services Bureau, sure. And we wouldn't have these problems. But these kids who suffer are victims that can't care for themselves, and this is what we have to deal with. So, and you're right, it would take a saint for a situation such as that. It's just unbelievable.
Well, thank you. Any other topic that you'd like to discuss? Is there any members in the Jacksonburg Council here? I know we have some Wayne Township trustees here.
I think Wayne Township's here.
Yes.
Yay!
Tim.
Well, thank you. Is there any topic that you'd like to talk about? Yes.
I have two questions.
Okay.
They got a sign up down in New Miami now that says that the roads will be closed for 30 days, 7 Mile Avenue. Do you have any? I haven't heard or know any reason why they're closed. They've had it closed all summer.
If you, we can find out that answer by calling the county engineer, and if you leave your name with Derek, he'll get the answer back to you, and whoever else wants to know that.
Another question I have for you is, we keep hearing about sewers coming north out of New Miami, and I've heard it's going to be at ADS this November, and I've heard it's going to be in 7 Mile here another year. What's going on with the sewer? Where's it going to be? At what time and so forth?
You know, well, that's a good point. I tell you what we can do. We have had discussions. Our Environmental Services Department has had discussions with New Miami and I think some of the surrounding areas. What we can do is put together an update and send it to all residents in the area. When I get back to the office, I'll direct that be done. Because there are some discussions, and there's a lot of interest in having the sewers extended. We'll get you some information.
That's part of what's had that 7 Mile Avenue blocked is because of the
new treatment plant.
The new sewer system and the treatment plant in New Miami.
It's all been repaved, and now it's got a sign up. It's been closed for 30 days.
I'll follow up on that.
It's written somewhere. When they put new pavement down, they have to tear it up again. I don't know where that just seems to be part of the Murphy's Law. That's it.
Except in one part of Butler County. They never paved anything in Middletown, Ohio.
Well, I think Hamilton's the same way right now.
Well, I've been there.
Some of those streets
are
bad, too.
I can't get out of the Middletown potholes.
Yes, sir.
I was just out of curiosity. What's the status of the extension of 63?
Money. Lack thereof. That's really a big issue with the state, as far as I see it. We've tried several angles, and right now it's kind of on hold because we're trying to figure out a way to get money for the Liberty Interchange, the Bypass 4 widening, and the 63 extension. The 63 extension is badly needed, has been for a long time, and we thought we had the wheels in the process to have that taken care of, but we were trying to do a tax issue at that time for that project. But that was referendum, and that didn't go anywhere, and the state actually took back the money that they were going to forward for it, and we had to match it. And that's still being held. We could, I think we still can get access to it, but right now we're having trouble coming up with enough money from the county because then after we did that, tried the tax thing, that's when everything kind of dropped as far as the economic picture. And so we've just been trying to get by like everybody else, the townships and the businesses and everybody else. So we really haven't had the funds. Everybody's in agreement, all the entities across the way. Matter of fact, Trenton has already purchased some of the property in the right-of-way with money that they've realized from a RIDS, a Residential Improvement District, sort of like TIFs, Tax Increment Financing procedures that they use. You want to add to that at all?
Yeah, I think that pretty much covered it.
And the fact that when we did when the we did drop it, the state when we didn't have the money, and the state took back its money, that opened up the alignment and developers built in that. So now we have to realign it, which I thought made sense anyway. But that's is a paperwork problem, which you know.
There's a there the engineer is presently completing the alignment study, and we lost at least 2 years when we were unable to come up with the match money that the state requires. But there was also this problem, we were unable to come up with $1 million or whatever it was to the developers there were very accommodating and gave the county and Miller Brewery that had an interest in it, and Trenton, and everybody involved, they said, look, we've got an investment here. We're willing to walk away from that if you'll just hold us harmless. In other words, make sure we didn't lose any money. And they gave us to a specific date to come up with that money. And no one would step forward. We tried every way in the world to get somebody. And that would have preserved, that corridor right away was approved by the state. Now, there were some arguments in Monroe as to, with the Monroe City Council and so forth about whether that was a preferred
alignment
and so forth. But bottom line is that once that occurred, once we didn't come up with the money for that, they went ahead and built the houses. That made it absolutely necessary to go ahead and do another corridor study. That's going to be completed. So we go back to the state and say, okay, we still have the problem that Commissioner Furman said, you know, what are we, it's now, it has been divided into two parts. The first part would go to, where do you remember?
To Trenton, basically, to
near the rest. The other fight that a lot of folks on the western part of the county, when we had some of the earlier discussions, like don't take it all the way to, was it 127 or, yeah. There were some other issues about that. The folks in 7 Mile weren't happy with the alignment. We left those fights for another day, but the first piece is about $60 million. So,
I was just wondering because Wayne Township, you either have to go down through town, or you have to go all the way over to Middletown practically to get to Wayne Township from 75. There's no bridge in between. And you know, we lost our chance to extend Bypass 4 and 747, which would have been terrific. And the only one that's left is 63. And I don't know how else we would get traffic over there.
And it's not going to get easier with the growth that we're experiencing.
Well, downtown at Martin Luther King and High Street, it's impossible. I mean, even that left turn lane getting onto High Street from north backs up and blocks the next lane of traffic.
Because there's always a train on the tracks.
Well, down there, you don't have to worry about the trains because of the nice underpass we have. But the trucks and so forth are backing up, and that left turn is so short because they want to go down to Market. They want to have a left turn to Market. Maybe if we got rid of that left turn to Market, maybe it would help traffic a little bit get past that intersection, or maybe even open up two lanes to make the left-hand turn, because a lot of people are using the Fox Highway, thank you, never dreamt that they were ever going to use the Fox Highway. And it's a terrific way to get over to 75, but getting down through town is miserable.
Aren't you going to fix the Woodsdale Bridge? Isn't that project a go now?
Well, I think the engineer would know that. I'm not sure.
I think I remember what the engineer talking about. That's on the master plan. I don't know when.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, they're talking to the people about easement rights right now for that.
Okay, I can find out.
And that would solve his problem right there.
Mr. President, may I? Yes. I want to point out there are two people here. We had a few. I had asked them to come to that meeting where we dealt with the animal shelter, but. Hal Hamill and his wife Martha, and I would encourage all of you, if you haven't been out to their place, they operate out of their own, they have a trust fund, a charity, they operate their own animal rescue.
Where are they?
Will you please?
Oh, okay, oh, sure, okay.
And that's their whole life, and they are the ones I mentioned that it offered to make land available. How much land do you have out there, Hal, and your... where the home is, that you're 200 acres? And they have...
Who wouldn't need all of it?
Everything. it's a wonderful... it's amazing that they've given so much to those animals that they come in just terrible conditions. Martha and Hal feed them in bottles. It's just unbelievable. But they have a lot of open space. And the type of... Derek, you ought to be an animal lover. You ought to go out there and spend some time. You ought to, Hal, make sure that Derek comes out there and visit. They got kangaroos. What all you got out there?
No stingrays, I hope.
We got wallabies, alpacas, llamas, monkeys, all kinds of exotic birds, miniature donkeys, miniature horses. In fact, I spent the day, we had 19 of them that we had their hoofs trimmed. So I had a big day early.
Wow. How many dogs you got out there?
What, sir?
How many dogs?
How many dogs?
I'm not going to tell you.
Wait a minute. Never mind. I might have asked the wrong question. There might be.
So on top of that, Hal was with Farm Bureau for many years. He was one of the administrators, and he was my wife's boss when she worked there way back many years ago.
They do. It's good seeing you. They do.
Yeah.
And they've got this trust set up, and I'd like to get them together with Leland.
Okay, sure.
Well, thank you for being here. Thank you for your work. We hope
we
that it passes.
We appreciate you fellows very much.
Well, we hope it passes in November. Anyone else have any topics that you'd discuss?
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Fox, I'd like to thank you for speaking at the AKA Curtis Street Rally. I enjoyed the reading from True Steel. I wish all of you, if there were anything you could do to help this lockout get settled, I would hope that you would do whatever you could do.
It's gone on far too long.
Yeah.
It's been six months.
It's really
The unemployment's running out in 2 weeks.
We passed a resolution tonight, Mike, on asking our Workforce Investment Board to make them dislocated workers.
Oh, yeah.
So they can do training and all that stuff.
Are you aware of that?
We should put the press release out on that.
Yes, we will. Okay.
Well, thank you. Anyone else? Yes, sir.
If 63 does expand, who holds the eminent domain rights on that expansion? The state or the county?
We can do it. The county can do it.
All the above, I think.
States, counties, TID, Transportation Improvement District, cities.
Who holds the financial responsibility? State?
Well, it depends on how the financing is structured.
It could be the county, it could be the state.
We've looked at different models. It can be organized several different ways, and it just comes down to who's putting the money in the pot. That'll determine who ultimately is responsible for the project. The point is, sometimes the state may say, well, we want to do it, in which case they do the whole thing. But like on Liberty Interchange, we've got the Transportation Improvement District taking the lead, but working in cooperation with the township trustees, the county, in that case, the TID has the financial responsibility for it.
Thank you.
So you foresee the state adopting or going against the Supreme Court decision on eminent domain?
Well, that's different because this would be a public purpose. The eminent domain that they're talking about is giving the land to a private developer for use. So it's different. The eminent domain for public purpose is still intact, but it's the eminent domain that is used in order for the city to give to a private developer for redevelopment is one that's in question with the Supreme Court. You know what I'm saying?
This is for the greater good, and it's still allowed. There's no impediments there, as far as we know.
So the state was supposed to have a ruling on the private development eminent domain proceedings, is that right?
Well, I think that the legislature is probably going to be taking that up and determining what they want to do, but they probably won't do it until next year. Because the U.S. Supreme Court has put that back to the state legislatures to decide. And our Supreme Court has looked at what the legislature has determined and has ruled for private property. But that could change if the legislature wants to pass another law that clarifies it.
Bob, you or Tim or Bill, have anything you want to add? You want to say anything? It's your bailiwick. I mean, we appreciate your hospitality.
Yes, we do. Well, thank you very much. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Commissioner Fox?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
You guys sit.